Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Was your home damaged from the heavy rains or flooding? We have a couple of experts with us today to help you with fixing that damage and also to answer other home remodeling and home improvement questions as well. Chad Spade back with us of Chad's Design Build. He owns that company. Works out of Monona in Madison. Chad, good to see you again.
Thanks, Larry. Always great to be here.
And Tony Trapp back. He is the owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling, also past president of NARE Madison. And Tony, welcome.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
So we'll talk about some of the damage that can be done by water and also look at ways to prevent it from happening. So what repairs are you facing after winter water damage? What would you like to know about keeping water out of your house? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And with all the rain and flooding, what kinds of damage are you guys seeing? Maybe start with you, Chad.
Sure. Well, you know, water seeping into basements in many homes, and when the ground is saturated all around and you've got standing water outside, sometimes there's just nothing to be done. You know, at some point, all systems are overwhelmed. Excuse me. And so what we look at, when we're finishing off a lower level, is how are we going to mitigate against the potential for these sorts of water events, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you normally start by looking at the outside. You know, has the exterior of the home been waterproofed? And if not, is it possible to do that? It's often very disruptive to excavate on the exterior of a home and do that. But that's the best thing you can do generally. And then, of course, regrade the property to keep water away from the foundation as much as possible. And then on the inside, you're looking at how do you take that water once it gets inside and manage it so that it's not damaging the building materials and you're collecting it in a sump pit and pumping it out. But, of course, when you're surrounded by saturated ground, where are you pumping that water?
You know,
it's almost becomes this, you know, feedback loop where you pump it out, it comes back in, and you know, you just, the pumps can't keep up. So, some people have unfortunately, you know, been inundated despite having done everything as they should have, and yet, you know, the more systems we can put in, preventative, and then also some of these pumps and other things, that's how we manage it.
Well, got a friend who lives on Lake Monona now that has two sump pumps, both heavy duty, and they both run constantly 24 right. hours a day right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an unfortunate
thing. Tony, that's kind of the unfortunate thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that can really happen. And then if the power goes out and they don't have a battery backup system, then
boom.
And it just keeps coming in. Yeah.
Well, you know, just relating to this is Sarah from West Bend. So let's just go right there to Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I live in West Bend in a lake association. We have 75 homes in the association, and I live closest to the lake, about 150 to 200 yards away. So we're not lakefront property by any means, but there's four homes that live on the south side of a gravel lake road, private access for the neighbors to go enjoy the lake. And the cul-de-sac, essentially right on the north side of the road, sits significantly higher. So all those homes, you know, the rain drains right down towards the lake and into my yard. And then in addition, in an adjacent perpendicular road that you enter the neighborhood, there's a few homes that actually live on a natural spring, and I know many of their friends of mine, they have two or three sump pumps in their homes sometimes, and they've all irrigated or drained their sump pumps to drain to the ditch, which then routes the water under the road and right along our parallel then to our lake road, which goes right to my yard.
And oh, no.
11, yeah, so it's a neighborhood issue, but I just emailed our president of our association yesterday to ask for some kind of resolution. I'm wondering what your advice would be, because 11 years ago when we bought our home, 10 months after we bought it, Our county was declared a state of emergency, and our basement corner where the sump pump is cracked and sank. We've never had water in our basement or flooding, but I could see the sky through two walls in my home. And it cost us $40,000 that insurance didn't cover to dig under the home, hydraulically lift the home, install piers. We had to regrade the entire landscaping and issues there. So I'm just fearful because this the structural engineer we hired, they say, is increasing the groundwater level, and it's a very fine silt since we live close to the lake. And I feel like all of these drainage issues could and are affecting the structural integrity of my home and what your recommendations would be.
Wow, that's a tall order, Chad.
It is. So there are a lot of things going on there, and certainly I think the fact that you have this neighborhood association, and hopefully it can take on this problem in a more global kind of, you know, neighborhood-wide perspective is a good thing. For your own property, I would say it sounds like you've done some of the things that I would generally recommend as first steps, which is to do some regrading of your property so that water that's moving on top of the ground during these extreme rain events, when the ground is saturated and it's just, you know, our yards kind of become streams and rivers, making sure that you've got some berms and some swales that are taking the water around your house and keeping it as far away from the foundation as possible, so that when it does sit and start to soak into the soil, it's farther away from your basement where it's going to present problems. And so that sounds like the primary thing that may need some additional attention at this point to help you. And it could be that the way the curbs and the storm stormwater systems are graded could be problematic for the neighborhood. You know, you've described a few other things going on there that sound challenging for your property.
With those... If you've already had an engineered solution for your foundation and they executed that, that's a tricky situation. If that happens again, I would definitely contact that company and engineer again. But Chad's exactly right. If you can get the surface water away, by all means, that seems to be the cause of the problem.
And it does sound, as you were saying, like a sort of a global thing. I mean, a community global thing there, that it may not be just her property that has to have something done.
Correct. And you know, the engineering, I mean, we were talking off air before the show about Belle Isle in Monona, and how when we re-engineered the streets there, the stormwater system goes into a massive sump pit and gets pumped up to the lake level. And, you know, these little islands are behind berms right now, you know, temporary berms, and the streets are below the lake level, but they're dry.
But they're dry.
Yeah. So it's crazy.
Yeah. So that may be another part of a solution in the community for you, Sarah. It's all cost money, though, doesn't it?
It does.
Quite a bit of it. Good luck. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Mark in Madison, we'll go to you. Mark, hi.
Hi, guys. I had a question. I had a water line burst behind my refrigerator. And, of course, you know, we didn't get it right away, so there was some mold buildup that had been, you know, we fixed that and got some mold abatement done. But now we're to the point where we can either reconstruct the wall or we can go with it's a 15-foot span open concept type deal and remove that wall and have a bigger kitchen. Do you know what kind of cost difference I'm looking at between rebuilding that wall, you know, and removing the studs that are in there, versus putting in an engineered beam and redoing that open concept plan? It's a two-story house with a basement, and it's on the first floor.
Gotcha.
Tony Trapp, what do you think?
Well, depending if that's a load-bearing wall and what mechanical systems are in it, there could be a significant cost difference between just putting the drywall back and then opening it up. There's a lot of things to consider when you open up the wall. like the age of the house. Are we dealing with any asbestos or lead? And then if it is load-bearing, how does that weight get transferred down to the basement and get supported properly? So you can be multiple times more than just fixing the wall, but it can be great to enjoy it afterwards. As remodelers, we like to do that. We can make it less painful. It would be wise to probably have someone come over and take a look at it in person and give some advice and possibly do some exploration to see if they have to open up other areas to make a determination of what's going through there.
Yeah, but if it's not a load-bearing...
Then it's just maybe moving some wires and maybe moving some return ducts. Sometimes on those interior walls, they use that wall to run ductwork to the second floor, and that can be a little bit more involved to relocate or find a different home. So just want to be conscious of that and careful. I wouldn't go in there with a sledgehammer like they do on TV. That gets more expensive to fix afterwards. So
there you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Dwayne in Weston. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi, Larry. We kind of went through everything you guys were talking about. You know, the obviously gutters, and then you go to, like, making a little berm. But eventually... This was back in 2008 down in Dubuque, where it's a lot of clay, so it holds the moisture against your foundation. We're here. Finally, though, I just bit the bullet, and we had it drain tiled on the inside. They come in and jackhammer a trench, dig a trench, lay pea gravel, drain tile, run it to a sump, and we actually redid the couple of the rooms, and it was beautiful, and best money I ever spent. No more hoping that these monster rains that started in the, we were getting 100-year rains every other week.
Yeah, understood.
But that was money well spent. Makes the house a lot more resaleable, you know.
Yeah.
But one tip I have for people that are getting, we put everything in plastic bins in the basement before we had the drain tiling done, for if it did rain and water would get in, nothing's damaged, you know.
That's he raises a lot of good points, Chad.
Yes, and putting in a drain tile system like the one that Dwayne described is a great way to go. And we do it many times when people are either solving a water problem or they're looking to finish off a lower level and they want that added system in place to collect the water and pump it away. But as Tony pointed out earlier, there are two potential problems with that make it not 100% foolproof. If the power goes out, you need a backup, battery backup for the sump.
Yep.
And then the sump could either, the pump itself or the pumps could eventually burn out and be overwhelmed, or the water could just be coming in at a faster rate than the pumps can pump it out. And in those situations, you know, you have a system failure.
Yeah.
You know, how big of a pump are we going to put in, and then where do we pump that water to allow it to work? And so 99% of the time, those systems are going to work great,
right,
and be an added level of security. And I think redundancy is always the best way to go. There's not one answer to these problems. It's good to attack it, you know, inside and outside.
Yeah.
Definitely. For multiple.
I did the same thing to the lake home that we owned, and that resolved pretty quickly the problems that we had there. I mean, I was really happy with it and had no problems after we spent that money, which was actually less than I thought it was going to be perfectly honest. So
right.
There you go. Leslie in Cottage Grove, it's your turn. Hi, Leslie.
Thank you. Our home is on is the last home before the drainage pattern, the outlots that direct water in our rural subdivision east of Cottage Grove. So when it rains, we're on a natural slope where a lot of water comes through. Our ditches will get like a foot of water in them, and we have built berms along the outlot part that we bought next to our house, which is the only place we could put our garden.
Mm-hmm.
But over the past 25 years that we've lived here, it appears that, or 20 years we've been, that our downhill slopes in our yard seem to have gotten steeper. And I'm seeing always a lot of water running through our yard from all of the neighbors that are up uphill from us. Because I see all this water, and frankly, there's two little rivers that form through our property and go into the outlot, which is our garden, and our garden fills up with water. I'm concerned about whether or not this is getting worse. What I wonder is there someone that can come out and take a look at the slopes and the drainage flow and make suggestions as to whether we should do different landscaping or plant more trees or bushes to hold back the soil?
Definitely. Tony?
Yeah, I think in the area we have some really good landscape architects and landscaping companies that specialize in water management and what plants to use to help manage that and keep it down. So they can do everything from like a rain collection pit to berms to more permeable surfaces. So, I mean, being in the Dane County area, you have access to really talented folks that have some skilled people on staff that can help execute that maybe in phases because it – All these solutions do add up. And so it's just deciding how far do you want to take it. But with these more frequent rain events, people are taking more steps quicker. So,
and how would Leslie find those people? What's the where do you look? And
there's there's some NARI members that are good resources, and then there's a landscaping association. I'm forgetting the acronym now in the area. Do you remember the?
I don't remember the landscaping organization.
Shoot. But yeah, NARI of Madison has a website, and I know there's several landscapers on there that could definitely help you out if you search for landscapers on the Find a Member section.
And NARI is N-A-R-I, right?
Yep, I believe it's NARI, N-A-R-I, Madison.org.
Yeah, N-A-R-I, Madison.org. So take a look there, Leslie. There's certainly a lot of qualified people in the area that can help you out.
Definitely.
In your area. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. We've been spending a lot of time talking about water and home improvement relating to water damage. But we'll take other questions relating to home improvement as well with our two guests, Chad Spate and Tony Trapp. Chad owns Chad's Design Build. Tony is the owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling, and he's past president of NARI of Madison. Dave Potratz, our engineer, Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home remodeling and repair issues today with our two guests, Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build, Tony Trapp of Tony Trapp Remodeling. I'm Larry Mueller. Pleased to have you with us today. Give a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And for our previous caller, Dave Potratz, our engineer, looked up the association that Tony was talking about. It's the Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association. And you can find somebody there as well.
Wonderful.
Let's, one of the questions I've heard from many friends is how do you get the smell out of the, you get a musty smell. Mm. What does that mean and how do you get rid of it?
Great question. Well, so the musty smell and mold and mildew are things that any home will develop if the humidity levels are too high. And if they're, if water is sitting around or moisture is not able to dry out. And so most homes require some sort of portable dehumidification in the summer months. And so that will help control that humidity. There are some additional products that you can use, put them out in your basement, and they actually help absorb odors and moisture. I mean, those are of limited value, but definitely that's something else you can do, particularly when you have an event like this. And when you've had a flood, it's really important to dry out the home quickly because mold and mildew will really set in after about 48 hours. And so that's why typically when you have some sort of a flood event, you want to bring in equipment or possibly even a contractor with much larger dehumidification systems to really dry things out as quickly as possible. Yeah. Of course, when you have a flood, it's hard to move the water out.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have Tom in Viroqua with a question for you. Hi, Tom.
Yes, actually, I have an observation relating to just Chad's last statement. Several years ago, when we had a big flood down in Gay's Mills, I was down working with a homeowner who had about an 80-year-old house with a bunch of high school volunteers, and the floodwaters had come up halfway up the, you know, the first floor walls, plaster walls, wood siding, and, you know, it receded fairly quickly, and FEMA was telling the homeowner that he should rip off all of his lath and plaster walls to let the whole thing dry out. The homeowner was unwilling to do that. So I had these high school students remove one row of siding around the outside, drill holes into the sheathing like as if you were going to dense pack the walls with cellulose. And then we set up a blower door in the house, closed all the windows tightly, and pressurized the house using the blower door. This was taking outside dry air, forcing it through the walls and then out through these holes. And within 3 days, the entire walls were totally bone dry. There was no mold or mildew, no corrosion of the electrical outlets. And the homeowner, and whereas their neighbors, you know, had gutted out their houses and many of them later abandoned their houses, this homeowner got a grant to jack up his house so it was above the floodplain now. And they used those holes to dense pack the walls, and he's very happy there now with a well-insulated, dry, and a preserved house with all of the interior plaster intact.
That sounds pretty cool. Tom, thanks. Chad?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great story, and it's important to note, and I suspect Tom would agree, that, you know, when you drilled the holes and discovered that there wasn't insulation in the walls, then that gave you an opportunity. You know, if it had been a house that had been dense packed, then that or had some other insulation material there, that material probably would not have allowed your approach to work the way it did. So I commend you for, you know, doing something that worked really well. And what would be interesting is, had it been different, and now, you know, if that home were to be flooded, you know, what would they do? It's also true, you know, Tom raises the point that plaster and lath, while it's not designed to get wet all the time, it's definitely more tolerant of occasional wetting than, say, drywall, which once drywall gets wet, you pretty much got to tear it out.
Yeah,
that's it. Tom, thanks again. Appreciate the call. We have Tim in Green Bay up. Hi, Tim.
Good morning. Thanks for the program.
Sure.
I have a question about some work I had done in my house 10 years ago. I had a tornado hit the house and damaged the roof and some windows. And now I have a major leak in the roof and along the window, the caulk, the grout is all chipped away. And I was wondering if there's any recourse or what would be a good plan of action to try to resolve the problems with the contractor. It made the mistake of using a chain contractor and not a local contractor.
Yeah. Well, what do you think, Tony?
I think depending on the time frame, you might be limited. I believe
10 years is pretty long.
10 years in Wisconsin is the limit. So if it's been longer than 10 years, you might be limited what you can legally do. I know John Freiberg, who's a guest, is very well versed in the limits of stuff like this, but definitely trying to call the contractor and see what you can do there directly if they're still around and answer their phone. Otherwise, you may be on the hook to resolve these issues yourself, trying to find someone local that can come up with a solution, whether it's long-term or temporary.
So if it was a little less than 10 years, there might still be some?
And then it's depending, as a customer, how bad the damage is and how much time and energy are you willing to put forth to go resolve this issue? Because sometimes if you're trying to go pursue legal means to win something for a smaller amount of money, you might win the case but still need to collect. And that can be a whole nother process. So some people turn into a full-time job, and that can be pretty disruptive to your life.
Yeah.
And the other thing I would add is, you know, it might be worth going after the contractor for negligence, but you probably don't want that contractor trying to fix this. So you know, that's something you always have to weigh. If you regret the decision, sometimes it just makes sense to start over and find someone you're going to trust who can fix it and then take care of you in the future.
There are, what is it, the Department of Agriculture and Consumer
Protection. Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection.
You could contact them. You could contact if they have a building license in Wisconsin. Those are some basic things. Or, you know, some people shame other people through Better Business Bureau, or not shame, or bring it up there. They're more responsive then, so...
You might, so I would contact the contractor first.
Absolutely. Give them an opportunity to see if they can refund some money or have someone else fix it. That would be a great thing. And then maybe contact the Department of Consumer Protection, and they're going to have some resources and advice for you.
All right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Roger in Madison. Hi, Roger.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a couple of questions with regard to a lot of this water stuff. I am in a situation where I need to replace my driveway. It's an old long driveway between two fairly closely spaced houses. The concrete's gotten pretty broken up over the years. It occurred to me that I might be able to replace it with some kind of pervious pavement. One of the pushes to do that is that the city imposes extra sewer tax on property if you, say, build an outbuilding or increase the size of the surface of your driveway, because that reduces the pervious surface of your lot and you get more runoff from it. The driveway does slope downhill somewhat. I'm wondering about the efficacy of digging that up and putting one of those putting a gravel bed under it that can hang on to a lot of water and possibly even increase the effective pervious surface of the lot, because it's actually catching gutter water that would ordinarily only run off and holding it. The other piece of this puzzle is that because the houses are closely spaced, that bed of gravel is going to be the one of the long edges of it is going to be maybe 6 feet from my basement foundation, which is sandstone.
Yep. Gotcha. I think you bring up a good point. Looking at those basement foundations first, if they're not really strong, you know, putting more pressure through water, soil, and especially in our climate where it freezes and expands, that could compromise your foundation. So having a qualified landscape architect or a landscape company that's familiar with putting these pervious driveways and its design for your situation would be really important, someone that's done this before, and just making sure if you do go that direction, that you and your neighbor's foundations can both support maybe those additional pressures that might result from wetter soil than normal.
Yeah.
And then I would add, you know, another way to look at this, if it doesn't make sense to make create a pervious driveway right along your foundation, you might be able to look into some systems that would allow that water to come down the drive and then get diverted awesome. Off into the front yard before it runs out into the street. So it allows you to be more responsible with keeping water on your property, but not allowing it to soak in right next to your foundation. So there are a variety of strategies, and sometimes it's just putting impervious surfaces closer to the street.
Yeah.
So there are different approaches that can help address all of these things.
All right. There you go. Thank you, Roger. Appreciate it. And Peter in Racine, we turn to you next. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen. Great show. Got an application where it's an old farmhouse in the backyard. They'd put in the black drain tile to drain away a lot of the water that ran off the farm fields. And it looked like that might work. But since then, they've added a water line from this old farmhouse out to the animal pasture and underneath the black drain tile. In these last rains, the water followed this trench that the underground water line out of the farmhouse went, and it just kind of channeled the water in there instead of going out the drain tile. So is there anything other than, like, pouring a cement barrier someplace where that ditch was dug to try to keep the water from, you know, running down this new easy access highway for the water to go to? Is there some way to stop that water economically so it goes through the drain tile instead of thinking, hey, the house is a great place to dump into?
So a quick and easy fix.
No quick and easy fix. Yeah.
Unless there's some way to tie an inlet to that buried drain tile that's a low point and diverts it back to that point. It sounds like you're probably up against landscaping and grading again.
Yeah, I think gravity's always going to win out. And if you, you know, it sounds like maybe this extreme weather event and the conditions we've had recently are such that these systems are going to have to be reworked. And it could be that what you had was by and large adequate, but that this event has disrupted it and it's going to have to be restored. You know, but you might look into doing something. Maybe the drain tile itself should be a little larger this time so that it's less likely to get overwhelmed.
Right. Or it could have been compromised during the water pipe installation. Sometimes those drain tile pipes get collapsed or get clogged and need to be cleaned out or replaced. So that's also
another issue.
Yeah, and it might be good to mention that, you know, a lot of times the you referred to the black, it's often a flexible drain tile, and it's got ribs in it or ridges that make it flexible. And each one of those little ridges collects material and actually will reduce the water flow. It creates turbulence in the pipe. And so a lot of times when we're putting in these systems, I know our landscapers will use, where they can, rigid, smooth drain tile, and that will move water faster. And, you know, every system has its, you know, different materials that work best, but you might look into something like that depending on the situation and upgrade the sizing as well as the design of it.
All right. There you go. Thank you, Peter, for calling. Appreciate it. I hope that helps. Chad in Madison, your turn. Hi, Chad.
Hey. Hey, Tony. Hey, Chad. How you doing? This is Chad with Focus. How are you?
Hey. Good.
Chad.
How's it going?
Hey, I have an interesting question that I thought I'd bounce off you. Years ago, when I was looking into efficiency reform in my home, I ran into those devices that you can hook up to your electric line in your house, and I think they're essentially a large capacitor. At the time, I only had a washer and a dryer, not a whole lot of motors, and it was saying how the initial pull from those motors is what it's going to save you on. So I was kind of like, yeah, it's not quite worth the cost. But I've just moved into a new home, and I actually have 5 pumps in there, and exactly what you guys were just talking about, the 2 cell pumps and the septic pump and the well pump. And I'm thinking, with all those pumps, I wonder if it would be worth using one of those devices again. So I looked them up on Amazon. They're called Kvar Electric Savers. That's one name. I don't know. Have either of you ever run into them? Have you ever had any experience with something like that?
We're both shaking our heads.
Sorry, no. Chad. That's a new one for me. I'm going to have to look that up later. I'm curious now.
I'm trying to just think in my head how it actually would save electricity, the physics behind that, and I'm not. Right. Of course, I'm probably not the best qualified to be thinking about this even, but I don't know how it would work. I would certainly do a lot of online searching to see if, you know, looking at consumer complaints or comments about it from others.
Yeah,
for sure.
I'll follow up with our electrician, maybe MGE or something like that.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, that, and actually, that might not even be a bad place to go. A place like MGE, since you do live in Madison, Madison Gas and Electric might have some comments on it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a great question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, these two will probably look something up on it too, just to see what's going on. Chad, thanks. Appreciate the call. Oh, boy. Yeah, Lou Ray in Rosendale, it's your turn.
Hi. I have a problem with my having the sump pump in my basement. Was nearly overwhelmed last spring, and the water was flowing in so fast that the sump pump was basically running continuously. As soon as it would pump it out, a minute or less later, it was on again. And I'm thinking I've got to get that sump pump out of the basement and get the water, like put another sump pump in outside somewhere or something, because it's just a disaster waiting to happen. It's going to flood my basement. And in this last rain event, the sump pump was running every 3 to 5 minutes. It's just coming in so fast.
How deep is the sump pump in the, did you?
It's in the basement, and it's just maybe 3 feet or 2.5 feet under the the floor of the basement.
And I guess it would be important to take a look outside and see if that water is coming from surface water and if it can be redirected from maybe a gutter that's not working properly or some landscaping that could be altered, so you're not putting so much pressure on that one sump pump to do all the work to get the water out of the basement. You know, just because we see the problem there, let's try to treat the source, the root cause of it first, if possible. I would say definitely investigate outside, like Chad mentioned before. Grading and gutters are definitely important to consider rather than trying to put additional mechanical systems outside. It gets more complicated in the winter in our climate.
I would agree, and then I would add that if you still have that same pump that you've been concerned about, you're still going to need a pump in your sump for that backup, because even if you divert 90% of the water that used to come to that sump pit, you're still going to occasionally get water there, and you're going to need to pump it out now that you have the systems to collect it, because otherwise it'll just fill up and it could come up into your basement. And I would recommend looking into maybe putting a larger pump down there so that when you need it, you'll have a better pump, possibly a larger line that goes out of the pump so that, you know, you can increase.
And check that line that discharges from the pump so you can get it as far away from the building, because if it's discharging the water close to the building, it could just create a short circuit cycle and that could be part of the problem as well. Or maybe it came disconnected by someone mowing. It's always something good to inspect. It's really easy to, that can happen. You don't realize it.
The lake home I used to have, and maybe this was the wrong thing to do, but my pump was running sort of like Lou Ray's pump was running all the time. And I realized that the water level on that lake home was...
You were pumping the lake?
I was trying to pump the lake. So I raised the pump itself a couple of inches, and that resolved the problem.
There you go.
There was a level there that you were never going, it was never going to change.
Right.
So the path of least resistance. So I like that.
I raised it a couple of inches, and that solved the problem.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
and then it only worked when there was, you know, when there was, where it really was more water
right
there.
Sure.
Lou Ray, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Tony Trapp of Tony Trapp Remodeling, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home remodeling and repair today with our two guests. I'm Larry Mueller, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Tony Trapp of Tony Trapp Remodeling, our guests today. And we have Mary in Iron Mountain with a question for you guys. So let's go to her. Hi, Mary.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a cottage on an inland lake, and it's a cement block basement, and it's about 24 by 24, and it's a walkout basement. And I particularly have problems in the spring with what other people have been mentioning, getting some moisture in the basement. But it's pretty much along the drywall near the bottom, and I get some mold buildup, and I can take bleach and get rid of it. But the other problem is that it's a cement slab, and in the spring I also get some water coming up from the cement slab. So I'm wondering about what my options are, if I should have it excavated and put something on the cement block, whether there's tile would work better, whether I have to put a gravel bed because of the moisture in the floor. I do have to run 2 to 3 dehumidifiers during the summer. The cottage is drained and not heated during the winter, and, of course, not during the spring, which is when most of the problems happen. So I'm wondering if you have any suggestions.
One of the things is the slope away from the cabin. Would that have any impact at all? If you had a good slope, would that help, Chad?
Well, it could. I mean, certainly in the spring when we have snow melting and the ground is saturated, everything that we can do as that process of melt occurs to, again, move the surface water away from the ground that is up next to the foundation, you know, that reduces the moisture that's going to be trying to get into the home. And I know we've talked about it many times on this show. I mean, it's natural for a home to essentially pull in air and moisture from the lower level and then try to expel it out of the top. It's called the stack effect. And we're always battling the physics of these natural forces. And so keeping that water away from the outside will definitely potentially help. I don't know if for Mary, if that would be something that would work. One thing I heard her say that I was a little concerned about is the drywall is getting mold on it and she's bleaching it and this is happening again and again. And so you might look to remove that drywall, given that there's nothing stopping it from getting wet and moldy. You know, it sounds like there's some things that need to happen to the floor and the wall to mitigate that. The drywall is also just soaking up that moisture, and bleach is a very cosmetic way to deal with that problem. And the drywall just isn't designed to be constantly getting wet and taking on that moisture. So, and you could install a cement board or something down there that would just be a more tolerant surface to if you wanted to have something you could paint and look nice on the interior. But all the systems we've been talking about today might apply to help with your problem. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is that you could invest in a high-efficiency, high-capacity dehumidification system that would probably be a lot more effective and a lot less expensive to operate than 2 or 3 portable dehumidifiers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I put one in my house and saved $60 a month or something for my just portable one, and it does 3 times the job. It was incredible.
And it's less hassle, too.
Yes, it works better. It's drier. So the initial upfront cost it's expensive. I mean, this is upwards of it's between $1,000 to $2,000, but it does the job of 3 of them. It lasts much longer. It uses less electricity. Keep your basement drier.
There you go. Yeah, something to think about, Mary. Thank you very much for calling. Ruth in Nina, your turn. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering about Chad. I know he will know about this, and maybe the other fellow will too, about the pros and cons of a metal roof. I was thinking about, he showed this, the contractor showed me a sample of a roof that looks like cedar shake, or it's got the gravel on it, so it looks like a regular roofing. And also he talked about putting a rubber membrane on my dormer part that doesn't need a regular roof, he said.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, well, so metal roofing has come a long way. I mean, now many metal roof products look like everything else that you might put on a roof, and you wouldn't know it's a metal roof. We're accustomed to seeing a standing seam roof for mm-hmm. the kind of traditional metal roof. You know, the old-fashioned, like, standing seam metal roofing, one of its big advantages is that you could recoat that metal if the coating wears off. You know, and it's, you don't have to tear it off and replace it, which is what you do with a traditional fiberglass roof material composite, you know, three-tab sort of system, which most homes have. So the argument for a metal roof is that it will last longer. But the thing that I'm struggling with in our modern world, where we have more extreme weather events and just the, you know, hail, damaging hailstorms that are more common, is that a metal roof, depending on the type of metal roof you install, you know, is going to dent potentially and show these dents. And then you're going to have something that's cosmetically unattractive that you may want to deal with, even if it's still structurally sound. And then if you're replacing that metal roof that you were expecting to get 100 years out of, you know, have you really saved anything, or have you prevented putting things into the waste stream? But I'm not arguing against the metal roof. I'm simply saying that some of the arguments that we used to give to do it are a little bit less compelling. Another thing is that we've finally figured out how to deal with roof waste. And for the, you know, fiberglass roofing, it's pretty much all being repurposed. It's being shred up and, you know, put into asphalt roadbed, and you know, we've just found a way to utilize it. So but if you're willing to invest in it, you know, the metal roofing can be a great way to go.
All right, there we go. Thank you, Ruth, for calling. Corey in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Corey.
Hi, gentlemen. I'm just calling for a comment about the gentleman who called and was asking about the K-bar system for his house, thinking it would save him energy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the capacitor. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yep. And it's great in theory, but actually in practice, it really doesn't save you any money. It would take him about 50 years to actually see the savings on it. And I know if you go online, you're going to find a lot of YouTube videos that show it works, and it does on a very small scale. But when you're talking about your house, it would take a while to explain the whole electrical theory behind it, but it really is, when it comes down to it, it's a waste of money for a homeowner. So I just wanted to give them a heads up. As an electrician, I've been approached by companies trying to get me to sell it. I talked to my apprenticeship teacher when I was in the apprenticeship, and he explained it all to me, and it's unfortunate, but it really isn't. The only way to use less energy is by using less energy. So,
sound advice.
There is no magic black box out there like the people who saw this plane. So,
Corey, thank you. Yeah, thank you, Corey. There's the words from an electrician who has been approached by potentially using this system, and in his mind, it does not work. You know, you mentioned mold earlier, and the caller was talking about mold and the whole business about how you get rid of it. Yeah. Is there more? There's more to it, isn't there, than what?
You know, I talked to one of our inspectors that specializes in mold, and something important to consider for folks is if anyone has compromised immune systems or diabetes, this should not be something you attempt on your own. I mean, it can spread, and typically the molds in the basements are the ones that can make people sick. So everyone reacts a little bit differently. It can be immediate. It could be long term. So definitely being mindful in the quantity that's there. And if you have no other options and you're a healthy individual and there's no one that's at risk at home, it's, I guess, trying to keep it contained. So it's important that if there are ductworks in the basement that are open, that those are sealed, and that if you're removing items that they're cleaned in the basement before they're removed from the house, so you're not spreading it, and that you're taking protective measures to make sure you're protecting yourself. So those are very important things to consider, when you're dealing with mold, is definitely safety first.
Yeah, and a mold remediation specialist?
Absolutely worthwhile to have them come in and evaluate the situation, and they're going to have all the proper procedures to control it and dispose of it and clean up properly.
Yeah, makes good sense to me anyway. And Corey, again, I wanted to thank you for calling in with your comments. We are Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Tony Trapp of Tony Trapp Remodeling. Both guys work out of the Madison area. It's great to have them with us today. They will be with us until 12:30. We are going to take a look at the news, the weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with them. In the meantime, if you want to call in, the number is 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Ideas Net. Taking a look at home improvement today. We've zeroed in a bit on water, but taking other questions as well with our two guests. Chad Spade owns Chad's Design Build. Tony Trapp owns Tony Trapp Remodeling. Great to have them both with us. Questions, email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our or phone us at 1-800-642-1234. And we'll jump right back into the phones. Jan and Radisson up next. Jan, thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks, Larry, and thanks for taking my call. Love your show. This is my second time calling in.
Oh, thank you.
I heard the gal who called in talking about her, whether or not she wants to get a metal roof or not. They're great. I had one for 12 years. I guess the old-fashioned one with the seams and things. The only thing I can say about the metal roof is there are a couple of days in early spring, I was home from work, and I'd hear this huge noise slide off the roof. All the snow fell down, you know, like a glacier.
Oh, yeah.
One yep. time it took out my post with my electric meter in there, wiped that out. And then there were many, many little trees and stuff I planted, just broke those in two. So
Well, and you're in Radisson. You get a lot of snow in Radisson.
Oh, my gosh. It's like 3 feet or more on the roof. I don't know if you should pull it back. Do they still have those rakes that you pull back in all the snow? But that's all I can remember is, oh, my gosh, I'd come home from work and there'd be these huge, some would be just having 5-6 feet tall on the side of my house, you know?
Yep.
So they're great, but you have to kind of think about when they melt.
Yeah. Thank you. And I know, Tony, you've got something to add there.
They do make a snow bar for different types of metal roof that kind of hold the snow back and let it melt naturally rather than coming in an avalanche. So depending on the type of roof you're installing, your roofing contractor might be able to install those in critical areas where you have those electric utilities or air conditioners or plantings or entryways, so you're not burying your guest as they're waiting out in front of your door. But another thing to consider, some of the metal roofs where they have proprietary systems where it's not kind of site-made, what's going to happen in, 5 to 10 years, should like a big roof branch come, a tree branch come and damage that area, will you still be able to get shingles? So just planning ahead to make sure maybe you have a couple extra pieces just in case you need to repair it so you can keep that investment and you're not coming up with kind of a replacing a section because they no longer manufacture that color or style anymore.
Yeah, so it looks pretty weird if you...
Yeah, there could be some creative solutions, and maybe that's not the look you're going for. Yep.
Well, Jan, thanks a lot for calling. I know you got a lot of snow there, so if you still have that roof, you might consider What are they called again there?
Like a snow bar, or there's different, more decorative ones. And older churches on slate roofs, you would see even ones that would hold the back. There's lots of different solutions out there, everything from clear acrylic to metal ones. But, yep.
Thanks again, Jan. Thank you. Well, let's go to Beth in Menominee Falls.
Hi. Earlier in the conversation, either Chad or Tony made reference to a dehumidifier system versus dehumidifiers when you have a moisture problem.
Yeah.
Could you explain to me what a dehumidifier system is?
Sure. So there's a couple different ways, but the theory is that you're removing the moisture out of the air through condensation. It's condensing on a coil, and then it gets it drains out. So you have a standalone box. It's a dehumidifier pulling the moisture from the air, and they have standalone units that you can buy, like a Santa Fe is a brand name in Wisconsin that makes bigger commercial ones. April Air makes one as well. And then there's even units that you can talk to your HVAC contractor, and just like your air conditioner, it's hooked up to your heating and cooling system, and that can be really neat to take air not only and dehumidify it out of the basement, but other areas of the house as well, to add comfort in those times where it's not hot enough for the air conditioner to do its work. The air conditioner's really primary goal is to cool. Dehumidifier's primary goal is to remove extra moisture from the air.
Yeah. And these boxes that you were, they're different from the little one you buy for $150.
Yeah, so the $150, $300 ones that are like a backpack size, let's call it like a bigger backpack size. These that Chad and I are talking about are more like suitcase size. They have a little more space for air to go through. They're not cycling on and off as much. They're designed to handle higher loads at lower electrical cost.
And Santa Fe was one of the local, or Wisconsin anyway.
Yeah, I believe it's Madison, Wisconsin based. And you can purchase those typically through your HVAC contractor. I would contact them, and they're going to be able to size it appropriately and install it for you and maintain it for you.
Mm. There you go, Beth. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And Joe in North Freedom, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Larry. I just moved back to Wisconsin after 14 years in Indiana. And you're one of the big reasons.
Thank you.
Missed you. Yeah, I started listening to you online about a year ago. Anyway, so we just moved to North Freedom in time for the storms and flooding, and found out the house we bought does have some moisture issues. It's a poured concrete foundation, and it didn't get too far ahead of us. We were able to keep up with it with just a shop vac. But I'm wondering about berming up around, you know, I can already see where I need to do some landscape work. And I called a contractor to order soil, and all the woman would tell me was either topsoil or sand. You know, if I were in Indiana, I'd be looking for a clay-based soil. What am I to expect from topsoil from this region?
In terms of moving water away and...
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
I think maybe Chad is more, but I mean, if you get the soil down, it's important to get something that's going to hold it in place on top of it. Some folks will use that just as a base to put like a landscaping fabric and a wash stone on top so the soil establishes the pitch. And other folks are going to look at seeding that soil because otherwise it'll wash away on you. So I guess the other thing to consider that I run across is when people are doing grading, it's important not to bury your house. So it's okay to go on the concrete, but for people that have brick or other surfaces, you want to really stay away from the wood part that's on the inside, you know, minimum of 8 to 10 inches if possible. You can get down to 6, but the closer you get, the more risky it gets that splashback's going to occur. And you could have rot happening. So by fixing a problem, you don't want to create another one.
Yeah. Yep. Makes good sense. Does that help out, Joe?
Sure. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Kristen in Stratford. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. What's on your mind?
Well, I am trying to work on building myself a smaller home. And attach it to an existing shed. The shed is 32 by 52, so it's quite large with in-floor heating. that was built on a beam. My question is, as far as engineering, how to attach the house to the end of it, how far out from that end should I go? And what you recommend as far as, you know, can you do like a 6-foot slab out and then do your basement for your house? Because I want to do a walkout basement. And the other question is, from the time that I apply for and get the building permit, how long do I have to usually start and how long do I have till I have to finish?
Okay, Chad, do you want to take that?
Sure. I'll give it a shot. So it sounds like an interesting project. So this shed that you're referring to, it sounds like quite an outbuilding, you know, if it's got in-floor heat. And do you know what sort of a foundation or what, you know, what are the footings?
It's built on a 12-inch cement beam, they said.
Okay. So it's probably a floating slab designed to minimize its movement, but it probably doesn't go down the traditional 4 feet or whatever it would be. I'm not too familiar with the Stratford area where that is exactly, what part of the state. But so there are a variety of concerns you're going to have when you're attaching a home to a building like that. There are going to be some fire code concerns potentially. The compatibility of the foundations will be an issue because you don't want to attach two buildings together that are not equally well supported and resistant to movement from freezing and thawing of the land. So I'm going to recommend that you get an architect or an engineer involved in planning for this because there are many important variables that will have to be considered. The question about the permit, typically a building permit is good for 2 years. But you can ask that question when you pull the permit or call the municipality where you would be pulling it and just ask them that question. But in the Dane County area, typically it's 2 years.
Yeah. And you really do need somebody, an engineer or somebody to take a look at that.
Correct. I mean, there are a lot of issues that you'd want to get right or you'd think about before you would invest in building a home attached to a big building like that.
Yeah, and they're going to know a lot of the things that the building inspection office and permit office are going to want that you probably aren't even aware of at this point that are going to be right. Unpleasant surprises and they'll be able to help you through that process.
Yeah, and they'd probably even be looking at the slab or the footings of the other building. And
yeah,
correct.
And so I think that's very good advice. Kristen, good luck. Thank you for calling. Vivian in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. I love your show, Larry.
Thank
Big
you.
Fan, and I love PBS, This Old House, Ask This Old House.
Yeah.
I may not be able to do things, but I do learn what a good estimate and a good job looks like and who to call to get a job done. So your show is invaluable. But on one of the PBS This Old House segments, they featured a system where you could use city water pressure to force water through your sump system.
Yep.
And that would be in the event there was no power.
Yeah, I saw that system too. So it's a water that's run by the city water. So you're using city water to essentially pump help the sump pump run, and that's the extent that I know. I don't know if there's any local ordinances against us using that system in our area. I think that would have to be a conversation with a plumber to tie our drinking water system in with that sump system. That's also a good point to bring up that some people that are running their sump system injecting into the municipal water waste, that's a no-no here because that gets treated in extra money. So I have not seen that stalled in the Madison area, but I'm familiar with the one you've talked about. It's more common here to use a battery backup sump pump, so there might be an ordinance that I'm not aware of. I'll have to research that.
And Vivian, you're in Green Bay, so it'd be probably could well be a totally different ordinance in Green Bay than there is in Madison, Chad.
True. That's true. Yeah, I would call the local building inspection office and see if they could give you any information.
Well, they could at least tell you whether or not you could. It's legal to do it in your municipality. That might be the first. That's be the first place I went to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. Georgia and Holcomb, your turn. Hi, Georgia.
Hi. I have a question about an ice dam. It's on the north side of the house, and we've replaced the insulation. We've put in soffits and everything. We still have this buildup. I'm wondering if changing the angle of the gutter, because it is so level that it never completely drains out, even in the summertime. And what do you think about that idea?
Well, I want to commend you on thinking about ice dams before winter's here. So
yeah.
That's great that you're planning ahead. I guess I would say if your gutter's not pitched correctly, definitely you have to do that, number one. And when you said put insulation in the attic, the other part that's equally important is the air sealing, so that insulation works properly. If you did air sealing and insulation through a program like Focus on Energy and they evaluate it and said that's okay, maybe due to the orientation of the house and some other factors, the next solution we have for folks is not necessarily changing the pitch of the roof, but heat tape to create a channel so that ice doesn't build up. If you've explored all the other options, but it sounds like you're trying to go after the causes. Chaz, do you have any other ideas there?
No.
Those are all good suggestions. That's what I would
say. And if the gutter system is just sitting there, that needs to be...
That should be repitched regardless. That's going to help you. You know, as much as we love mosquitoes here as our state a bird, they don't need more homes to multiply.
No. And that's exactly the kind of place where they would multiply.
Yeah, the gutter gardens are better, not good on your house.
Okay. Yeah. There you go, Georgia. Thank you so much for calling. And let's see, Jerry in Appleton, we'll go to you next. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, yeah, I hear you guys talking about people regrading around their house, and then like the last guy you said, put some landscape fabric down and some stone and stuff like that. And just want to know what your thoughts. And what I did is, after I did that on the west side of my house, because we get the drains from that side, I actually put plastic 5 feet out from my house underneath, after I pitched the dirt, obviously, and then put the landscape fabric and then put the dirt on, just to get the water farther away.
Yeah.
You know, like your gutters do?
Absolutely. We do that too, Jerry. Our landscaper even uses a roofing membrane, like a 40-mil EPDM rubber, and they create almost like a skirt around the house. And that can really help divert that water further away. Or sometimes, due to the nature of the house, there's not a big overhang, and there's just a lot of water pressure there. So you're exactly right. You can keep, taking those more extreme measures if you need to.
Yeah, good going, Jerry. Thank you so much. Amanda emailed to say she's concerned that her sump pump is still running. She's in the Dane County area. There's no water in her basement, but there is water draining out in the street. Is this something to be concerned about, and who should she call to have it checked out? So the pump's running, continuing to run, even though we've had all these dry days. And
well, so there's the ground is completely saturated right now. And even if the weather, we've had, a little bit over a week of dry weather here in the Madison area, but, you can dig down a foot and the ground is going to be completely saturated from all this rain we've had. And it's going to take a long time for that to dry out. And so the sump system is down at the bottom of this. And so that water that's constantly pressing up against our foundations in our homes, we're giving it a place to collect. And it sounds like that's what's happening.
It's doing
its
job.
That's correct.
And what Larry said, if the lake level's higher and your sump pump's below that lake level, maybe trying to adjust that level slightly would help. Or if you have a ephemeral spring in your area, that could be leading to additional load. Like a soil engineer might be able to direct you. If you have continued problems and concern, you could take that route to investigate.
There you go. And Ryan in Green Bay with us now. Hi, Ryan. Thank you for calling.
Sure. How you guys doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, just one listening and coming back from a job out of the area, and a lot of callers are calling, obviously, about water and flooding. Being a plumber, get a lot of calls. Number one, like you said, obviously, grade runoff is probably the foremost issue. But as far as backup systems, you guys were mentioning, they just called about a water power backup versus battery backup and so forth. I definitely lean more toward a battery backup. Like you said, you're not wasting municipal water. And if the city ever has an issue on their water end, too, your backup's going to be useless. If callers are really looking at doing the best possible system and spending a few extra bucks is putting a home generator system in, yep. Obviously, then if any power outage, you got everything to the home is powered, and you can put two pumps in with an alternating switch. So if a pump fails,
yeah,
yep,
still good to go. So
yeah,
you got bucks, but that's the way to that's the Cadillac.
Yeah, yep. That's the cab. Ryan, thank you. Thank you. Comment, Tony?
Yeah, it's great if you can afford it and keep up on the maintenance to make sure that's working. The generator can help you in the wintertime and summertime. It can do a lot of different things. I know some folks that are near the lake. They have multiple sump systems with a generator, so they have multiple redundant systems like Chad was mentioning to really reduce their amount of risk in the basement. So.
Yeah, so very good information there, Ryan, and thank you so much for calling. Still on basements, but Vicky in Oregon, her basement didn't used to get water in it when it drained, but recently almost any heavy rain will send not just water but dirt into areas of the basement.
Oh.
Not noticeable water on the drywall. Are they looking at foundation issues or drainage?
Sounds like something might have changed. So if they've lived there for a while and not had an issue, I would take a good investigation or walk around. There could be some rodents that were making holes, and maybe something's moved or a drained downspout gutter got moved. I would do a really thorough investigation or possibly look for a crack in the foundation. Those can appear. Look for changes like that. So that's where we're looking at grading changes, animal disruption, gutter movements, maybe a foundation crack that could lead to all the things she's describing. She's seeing soil in the basement.
And I would say with the soil, you know, there are one or two locations that are the cause of that. So the good news is you probably, once you find that place that it's coming from, fixing that will take care of it.
I was thinking about my own place, my own home. There is maybe an issue on the outside wall of my home, but unfortunately, I had added a second room, and so there's no basement under it, and so getting underneath that to add to the slope is. Not going to be any fun at all, to be perfectly honest. But a lot of this isn't any fun. But you guys, it's kind of fun, isn't it, to do that?
Oh, it's a great challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Love it.
I tell you what, it's always fun to have you with us. And thanks so much. Chad, you're back November 8th. Thank you for that. And Tony Trapp, thank you so much. Excuse me. Tony Trapp owns Tony Trapp Remodeling of Madison. And Chad Spade owns Chad's Design Build. It's great to have them with us. And thanks so much for all your calls and for listening. Tomorrow, Lisa Johnson comes back to talk about wild cucumber vine and take your gardening questions. Thanks for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store. By the way, our Saturday replay of tomorrow is at 6 a.m.